This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It's Dukes and Bell. We are talking a lot about our Braves, and Grant McCall is going to join us next hour. What's wrong? What's going on? Why are we in this rut to start the season? 7 runs over 4 games as we lose this series and get swept by the Padres. Next up, yay, Dodgers tonight. As they start a 3-game series before they come home, Mike.
Yeah, man, as we said with the poll question, yeah, I mean, you never want to start a season 0-4. We just start 0-4, as you mentioned, in 21 for the World Series. But it just feels a little different because, man, you know, you're going through a juggernaut of a really good Padres team that was one of the hottest teams in baseball and went through us like poop through a goose. And now the Dodgers, who then went through the Padres like poop through a goose, and are the world champs.
All right, more on the Braves coming up, more on what's going on in the NFL as the coaches' meetings are happening and they're voting on a variety of things. We'll fill you in on the latest there. But right now, let's talk some dogs. All right, Connor Riley, before we get to football, Mike Bell has something he's got to get off of his chest.
All right, Connor. I said I'm going full attack mode. Not necessarily on you, but since we don't have Coach White on, I think you'll do. What's going on, man? I see more guys are transferring out. We all are losing Silas Demery. It's been the assumption that you're going to have some turnover with this roster. So are we going back to square one with Georgia after this tournament run?
It's not square one, but I do think that this upcoming year is going to be critical for Mike White. I'm not surprised that Silas Demery is losing. Like, unfortunately, Georgia right now is just in that middle class of basketball program, and I think Silas Demery is a talented enough player to where he can play and compete at a high level while commanding the kind of NIL money that, you know, top schools like an NC State, like a Duke have shown that they are willing to pay. And I'm not saying that Georgia wasn't willing to play that, but I mean, just from a situation, I know Duke is a school that has been rumored to be involved with Demery. If you can go be a guard there, I understand it. And that's just sort of the reality that Georgia has to live with right now. I know that's tough being an SEC school. And this upcoming year is going to be huge for Mike White and what he wants to build, because if he's able to put together, I think, another strong, sustainable team, and they're able to retain some of their guys, it's obviously a big loss if they're losing a player like Demery, who they really developed. And over the last stretch of the season, you saw him make a big step. If they're able to navigate this, they're able to land guys out of the portal that have multiple years of eligibility that are able to develop, that's where I think you can slowly start to level up. But this is not going to be a quick turnaround. And I think you losing Silas Demery, I think, is an example of that.
Connor, I think they were the two best teams in the SEC this year. I don't think we should be surprised. They are both number one seeds, and they're both headed to the Final Four. I'm talking about Auburn and Florida. Do you see one of them lifting the trophy up, cutting down the nets in San Antonio?
I can see both of them doing it. One of the great things I think about this particular Final Four with it all being one seed, I see all four of these teams winning a national championship. I think Duke is the overwhelming favorite. And if I had to make a prediction, I think the winner of this Duke-Houston game is going to be the team that wins it all. But Auburn, this is a team they've been through a lot. These guys came back to play in this game. To make a deep run. Johnny Broome, one of, if not the best college basketball players in recent memory. And then this Florida team, I mean, they're just elite shot makers. You have seen them, play games against UConn, play games against Texas Tech, where most teams find a way to lose those games. Florida, to their credit, found a way to win them. I'm excited to watch both of those games this weekend. But, you know, watching that Duke-Alabama game over the weekend, Duke is just, in my opinion, operating on another level right now. But one of the beauties about the NCAA tournament is that you just need one off night and you can advance and potentially make your way to a national championship or win a national championship.
I know that we talked a lot about, you know, UGA, and there were some limitations there. I thought you saw, you know, Tennessee. I mean, that's a team that finally got over the hump against Kentucky. Third time was the charm against the Wildcats. But to see Rick Barnes, and it's always close to home with Carl because he watched a lot of it at Texas. But, man, to be stymied for just 15 points in the first half by Houston? I mean, I know there's other conferences outside of the SEC that are playing good ball, but Houston's defense is at another level.
Yeah, that team just physically just beat you up. And I got a chance to watch them. You know, they're playing a 16 seed because they were in that same bracket as Georgia. But if Georgia had found a way to beat Gonzaga, I don't think they find a way to beat Houston. And the team that Calvin Sampson has put together is just so impressive. And, like, you know, even though Tennessee obviously started yesterday's game poorly, like, the effort that they showed in the second half to try and make that a game, I think speaks so highly of what Rick Barnes has built at Tennessee, and you hope that if you're a Georgia basketball fan, I think maybe that's a model that you can follow there instead of, you know, look, like, they're going to get talent, but it's never going to be consistently that high-end, top-tier talent. You're going to have to truly build a program over years. And even at Tennessee, it takes time because you've seen them level off a little bit. In the last few years, they've gotten to the Elite. Okay, well, so now how do you get to the Final Four? There was a time ago where Tennessee was just not there. And so I think that's the problem that Georgia is going to potentially run into at a certain point with Mike White, but they've got to take the steps to get there first.
All right, Connor Riley, who covers the Dogs for Dog Nation, what's the latest on spring ball, scrimmage number two? Like, what's the latest with Kirby and this team?
Yeah, it's a team where I think this defense is going to be a good bit better than you might expect given what they're losing to the NFL draft. I think it's a lot of wait and see on this offense here right now. I think the offensive line, look, they're missing two guys who I project to be starters, Monroe Freeling at left tackle and Daniel Calhoun at right guard. Those guys are not practicing this spring. And there's going to be a lot of eyes and attention on this offense. And, you know, they've had their first real scrimmage of the spring this past week, and they're going to have another one this upcoming weekend, and then obviously G-Day. How this offense continues to develop, and obviously I think most importantly how this offensive line comes together, is just going to be the biggest offseason story, and really even the biggest early season story as well. Because you look at that opening month, yes, you get easy games against Marshall and Austin Peay, but on the road at Tennessee and then home against Alabama, you're going to need your offensive line to play really well. I thought the best game Georgia's offensive line played all season last year was at home against Tennessee. So that maybe is a little bit encouraging there. But how this offensive line continues to develop and come together, I think is going to be so important, not just for this offense, but really for this entire team in 2025.
We were talking about it last week, and I know you were on the show with us last Monday. It just seems like Kirby, and it's not like is he doing his own version of the Nick Saban? Remember how Nick Saban would always have a comment or a statement that would maybe be, he didn't like the way football was going. First, it was like all these ups, you know, these ups, what was it called, up-tempo offenses.
Yep.
And then it was,
somebody's going to die.
Then it was NIL. Oh, Texas bought and paid for that team, or A&M, I should say. But it just seems like Kirby kind of reasserting the idea of tough love, hard coaching. Elite athletes want to be coached up. Is there anything beyond just his talking to the media? Is there a bigger message there?
No, I think you're right on that, Mike, that specifically that tough coaching is something he's harped on in multiple press conferences now, competitiveness. And with NIL becoming a bigger part of the, you know, college landscape and this idea of getting instant access to money and not having to work as hard for it and work for it over the course of years, it's easy to sort of assume that, you know, kids these days come in spoiled. They don't want to work hard. They don't want, you know, they feel like they've arrived when they get to college. And you can understand how frustrating that can be, how some of the entitlement has crept in. And that's something that even before I think NIL had mushroomed into whatever it is now, had been something that Kirby had been working about. You know, that is not just a money-related thing. That's maybe also a generational issue that we're grappling with right now. So I expect Kirby to have this kind of line moving forward of, hey, we want to be tough on you. We want to be hard on you because we believe that in the end ultimately makes you more successful. And those sort of calluses that come from being difficult spring practices, from getting yelled at on the microphone, we think that the long-term payoff for that is much better than just necessarily always coddling or giving in at the first demands to these players.
Connor, what are you hearing about these wide receivers, man? I mean, you know, I've been talking about it. I got to see guys catch the ball. I need yards after the catch. What are you hearing about these guys at spring ball?
It's a much more talented room than it was a season ago. And look, part of that is because of suspensions. Part of that, you know, was a variety of recruiting misses in recent years. They've so clearly upgraded the talent in this wide receiver room. I think you can feel a little bit better about that. The two obvious issues here are, one, they just got to catch the ball. At a certain point last year, it became a mental thing where one player was struggling with drops and then another one were, and then slowly the whole room got infected with it. It was a loss of confidence, in my opinion. And that's why Georgia led the league in drops last year, not just the league, the entire country in that stat. The other thing, like, I know it's easy to dunk on Carson Beck and, you know, the way that things went last year, and he always felt like he was trying to make a play, and I think that hurt him in particular. As much as the team around Gunnar likes him, they like the leadership that he brings, they like wanting to play for him, I don't believe that Gunnar Stockton is a better quarterback than Carson Beck is. And so the wide receivers themselves are going to have to elevate their game and play at a higher level, because I don't believe that Georgia has the same strength at the quarterback position that it did at times a season ago when Carson Beck was Georgia's quarterback.
All right, man, bringing it back to hoops with our man Connor Riley from Dog Nation. We talked about, you know, losing, you know, guys that are, you know, big parts of your run this year. Is Asa Newell going to come back? Are they begging Asa Newell to come back? Do you have to pass the hat to get Asa Newell to come back?
I think there's a world they'd love Asa to come back. They'd welcome him with open arms. Obviously, his brother plays on this team, but in covering this team down the stretch and seeing them, you know, after the loss against Gonzaga, I think Asa Newell knew that he was a one-and-done prospect here at Georgia. He's played his 1 year. He led the team in points and rebounding. He did everything he could. He's a big reason that they got back into the NCAA tournament. I will say it's a little bit interesting, you know, in following the draft chatter and following the mock draft stuff, Newell is not the lottery pick that he entered the year as. And I don't think it's anything that, like, Georgia did with him that led to that. I think it's just more his game, what he projects to be, what is his ceiling. And he's so clearly a very good college player, and I think he can seamlessly fit in on the right NBA team. But I don't necessarily know that he's going to go in and drastically elevate his game at the next level. So it is at least something I'm watching. I think he's gone. I think the way that they approached this whole thing, they knew that he would be a one-and-done type player. He's approached this with the utmost professionalism. He's been a joy to cover and a joy to watch play. But I do find it at least a little interesting in monitoring some of the draft chatter. He's not the slam dunk lottery pick, and you wonder if maybe another year at Georgia – that potentially helps him as they allow him to do more, especially as Georgia now has to replace Silas Demery, who was such a key offensive engine for them down the stretch.
Great stuff. Connor Riley, tell the listeners where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter, at K Connor Riley.
All right, Connor, we'll talk to you next week. Great job, man. As always, Mike counting down to, obviously, G-Day, not right. Televised this year. So if you're going, you got to go to the game. But good stuff there, insight.
Not a star, but a role player, R.J. Godfrey, about 19 minutes for the Dogs. According to our buddy Rusty Manziel, he's also in the transfer portal from Mike White's Dogs.
Who's not? All right, coming up.
That's a thing. That's a thing, man. You got one shot.
You got one shot. Coming up. Are the Braves in trouble? I'm being serious. He's 41 years old, y'all. How many times is he going to make his way back to the ATL? We're talking about Jesse Chavez. Listen, he is a fan favorite, but this is his 18th season in the majors.
Wow.
9 different teams, and now he's back up with the Braves, Mike, because what's the guy's name?
Hector!
Get him out of here.
Hector Neris.
Had to go.
Good back. Well,
Hector!
Good for the Phillies, and then not so good last couple of years. And then, you know, again, we always look for value. We look for bargains. The good news is we cashed that Groupon, and he gone. They DFA'd Hector. And Jesse, as you know, got brought in the last few days of camp. He's up with the big club.
All right, he's back. That move happened today. Here's the bigger problem, and it has nothing to do with Jesse Chavez. We just, you know, we have to mention that. We're not hitting to start the season. And certainly we're not scoring enough runs because we only scored 7 over a 4-game period. When you take a look at the Dodgers right now, by the way, they are 5-0. The Dodgers have a lot of star power, right? We know this. And one of those guys used to be a Braves and Freddie Freeman. Obviously, they have Ohtani. Mookie Betts is a dude. Yamamoto. I mean, you can go down the list, Mike. Kershaw. Who don't they have?
They got them all, man. I mean, like I said, they've got – their number 4 would be our number 2. So, their number five would be your number two.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It really is. It's like Infinity Stones. They do. They have them all. So here's the deal. We head into this series tonight. We start a series with the Dodgers. And listen, baseball it's a long season. You have to forget about what happened in this series with the Padres. And the way you do that, Mike, is you have to hit starting tonight. And you have to score runs. The problem is that this is not going to be an easy task over the next three games. Now, you're asking a lot in Grant Holmes. Listen, if we had a solid five, starting rotation, you'd have a stopper today going to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to shut the Dodgers down, and we're going to be able to pick up a win. I don't know what Grant Holmes is going to do. Now, I know he's back home. Hopefully that, catapults him and gets his energy in the right place, Mike. But the bullpen has got to be better, too, guys. We lost three of these games in this series. The bullpen took three L's.
Yeah, we know that Hector, you can't blame him. He's gone. But
Hector!
This is why, you always laugh because every year I go, none of pitching. And usually it's starting pitching, but this year it was a combination of starting pitching and bullpen. And it's frustrating. You cannot, really blame the bullpen, though, when you haven't had a hit. Or I should say you had one hit yesterday, but you haven't scored a run in 22 innings. And that's where, you look at, Drake Baldwin. He's got one hit in that series against San Diego. Matt Olson is not hitting. Nobody is hitting. And then there you have the blind luck. We get a comebacker for the Braves, turns into a double, goes in the dugout. We hit a comebacker, it turns into like Marcell Ozuna getting doubled up off third, right?
Yep.
So it was a bad week at it in San Diego, but some of this you make your own luck. Our bullpen isn't that good, and these guys aren't hitting at all. And that's the thing. Now, but then you say to yourself, self, is this going to be like an 0-5, 0-6 start? As you said, the prospect of playing that loaded Dodger squad.
Yeah, look, and nobody's feeling sorry for us. I just think it's early in the season. We've got to figure this out. Snit has got some things he's got to figure out with the pitching staff and how he wants to use guys, and all of that will get resolved. What is the easiest part of this is hitting. Go hit the ball. Mm-hmm. And this with this lineup, and we talked about it before the season started, I thought that, Mike, with depending on, whether it was Profar leading off, Riley, Olson, Ozuna, Harris, Albies, we're going to be all right. And it just proved out to be in this four-game series with the Padres that, that wasn't the case. And so Michael Money Harris after the game yesterday, was like, look, you got to shake this out, and, we got to go find a way to get it done. Mm-hmm. And he's right, which gets us back to, who is that guy that you can rely on to get these guys going?
Yeah, we asked Michael Harris about that, a couple weeks ago. It was before camp started. And there was such a pregnant pause. In other words, he had to think about, who's the leader on that day? Who's the guy in the clubhouse who brings the guys together? Is it Ozzy? Was it Little D? Was it Travis d'Arnaud? He's in the Angels now. We know that Freddie had a role, and some of the guys maybe didn't like it, but Freddie was that voice. You had OGs and your good friend Eric Young, who's now with Ron Washington, but, Wash. There's coaches. They're just filling in with some guys that maybe when things are getting a little south, and they had, look, team meetings, you don't do a team meeting every 2 weeks. You got to pick your spots. But remember, a couple of years ago, they had that really awful game in Phoenix. They had a team meeting. Next, boom, they go and they roll. So, veterans know when to do it, but when do you not have a guy in the locker room says, hey, we need to take a knee and get together on this, right?
And that team meeting, by the way, was led by Snit. Snit was the guy who said, hey, look, y'all aren't playing up to your capability. And he probably dropped some other words, choice words that, were at that point timely. I'm not saying we need that right now. What I am telling you, though, is that you get indicators and signals as the season starts, as the season moves along, and certainly throughout the course of the season. The indicator right now is, what are the weak spots on this team? When you just played a Padres team that was vying for a chance to go to the World Series, Mike, remember, they beat us last year, and then, the Dodgers got them. You feel like, okay, how do we match up? And that's really what I'm looking at here. And we're about to find out, how do we really match up right now with the Dodgers? If the Dodgers sweep us, guys, then what we've learned in the first 7 or 8 games is we don't match up that well with these top two contenders.
No. And it is a look. It's a long season. And we know that the Braves, as we said, 2021, it was about as bad as it could be. I was ready.
Fire sale it. Yeah, fire sale. That was you.
I'm ashamed of myself for saying it, but I did. And because it looked like all was lost. But they got hot and they got clutch. Guys, no one's going to remember getting smoked by the Padres if this team goes on and wins the World Series.
Absolutely.
And we know our problem. Our problem is the bats doing what they're doing right now when we play Philadelphia or whoever in a best of five. So that's been our Achilles heel. Last year we couldn't hit again. Look, we were just lucky to make the playoffs. I'm never going to just – look, you're in the tournament, you got to make a run. But unfortunately, Carl, we were so depleted and that roster was just so meh that by the time we got to play San Diego, we were out of our depth. So it was an accomplishment just getting there. But this year, it's different. But is it? Because we just don't seem, and this goes back to the philosophy, we don't spend big money on pitching. We'll have to go get some by the trade deadline. No matter what this team's going to be, we're still going to have to get more pitching. But first things first, get this thing behind you. Let's get the bat swinging. Because you know, you say it all the time, good hitting is contagious, right?
It is. No
guy
doubt.
Gets rolling, everybody else gets popping.
Yeah, I know it's easy for us to sit here, and a guy hit me up. He's like, you're already going here. Going where? We're 0-4, and we didn't hit, and we didn't score runs. We're last in the league. We scored less runs than anybody this weekend.
Right.
Well, what do you mean? Going where? This is what it is right now. So we're not fabricating this. We're simply saying this is a team that on paper is supposed to be better than what we saw this weekend. I didn't expect to get swept, but I also didn't expect to sweep the Padres. I was hoping, Mike, that we'd split with these dudes, we'd split with the Dodgers, and we'd come back home and handle business at home against a weak Marlins team. That's what I was hoping for.
Well, the problem is, you know, when you look at the first game, Sale, he didn't have his best stuff, but the bullpen let you down. As we said, Hector, he's gone. You wasted a great effort from Schwellenbach.
You did.
He allowed just one hit through six. He got you in the first week of the season through the sixth inning. You got to win that game. Conversely, this week, A.J. Smith-Shawver, the pitch count freaking ballooned, and then A.J. Smith-Shawver's gone by four, and then you got a guy that Chris pointed out. We got we traded Ian Anderson to the Angels for Suarez, a guy with a career 5 ERA, and he gets lit up yesterday. So, unfortunately, you just don't have the good pitching, and when you're not hitting, it just seems to magnify. So, it's a brutal start, but you're never going to remember how you started. It's how you finish, and we got 158 more.
Yeah, we haven't even seen Iglesias. Why would we? We haven't
There's
had,
no reason.
We haven't been in a situation right. where he needs to come in and close a game. But that tells you, you know, when we get to 6, 7, 8 games, you hadn't seen your closer, that's a problem. 404-726-0929. We hope they turn things around tonight. More with Grant McCauley coming up next hour on the Braves, and we'll get his thoughts on how he sees this. And, you know, the good news for me is, Mike, we're last in batting average after four. We're last in OPS. Well, check that. The only team worse than us is the Mets. They're hitting 136. Oof. We're hitting 148. So if you take any solace in, well, you know, we're not as bad as the Mets. The Mets are the worst right now. And didn't they spend like double the amount of money we did?
That's a big 10-4.
Okay. So that's the positive, is all that money, and they start the season and they're crap as well right now. Right. So that's how you have to look at it.
Now, again, everybody's saying, I know what we need, Dukes and Bell. We need to get them torpedo bats down here.
Yes,
ASAP.
We do.
The Yankees hit nearly 3,700 feet of home runs with the torpedo bats over the weekend. And as we said, Goldschmidt is a big guy who will remind you a little bit of Matt Olson. He's using one, but it's not like Aaron Judge yet is using them. For a guy like a Chaz Chisholm, he's really getting the bat on the ball and the way the thing is working with the barrel of the bat. MIT, he's from Michigan, but he studied MIT. He came up with this concept. It's been used last year, just no one talked about it. But Louisville Slugger's making them, Mizuno's making them, everybody's adopting the technology. And hopefully, if you feel there's a better mousetrap, Carl, get a hold of one, right?
He asked guys on the Yankees, how do we get better? And they gave him all these suggestions. And then he went to work as being the mathematician that he is. And basically, they changed the weight distribution of the bat. It's brilliant, to be quite honest with you, because it doesn't break the rules. But it helps you get better ABs. And so, Mike, we'll see as this thing catches on and more people become aware of it. But as long as it's not breaking the rules, I don't see any problems. Unless MLB, just like they did many years ago, they changed the height of the mound and they go, well, you know what? That's a little bit unfair. We'll see how far they allow this to go.
Right. Now, remember, imagine with the high mound and you got like Bob Gibson and Don Drysdale and Seaver and Jim Palmer and all those other guys. It's like, forget about it. It's like, and that's when you go back and you say, man, we've seen defense, you know, come up or offensive go stats kind of go down over the years. Like last year, there was a vibe around baseball. Glavin talked about small stuff, but there was a dead ball. Chipper brought it up on one of those broadcasts on FanDuel.
Because offense was down, right?
Because for some reason, baseball went to a deader ball. Why would they do that? Everybody wants offense. You're getting your game times down. I don't think you can still have the offense and still have your shorter games because the pitch clock has worked that way.
Yeah. Fricky, that's a conspiracy by Fricky.
But when I heard Chipper talk about it on TV, I mean, I thought, okay, well, he knows about what's going on.
Yeah. I think this is exciting. Look, Yankee fans haven't been this excited since they won the World Series.
Right.
Seriously, you start out a game, Mike, first pitch, second hitter, third hitter, all hit home runs, and you hit 15 in a weekend. Like, That's what the league needs, and they need it in more places than just New York. What do we got coming up in Guy Talk?
Hey, man, I got to give a shout-out to Squid Billy coming out. I really, you know, usually I'm always complaining or making fun of Squid. He actually was rocking something today. I want to talk about it.
So okay.
Some of our audience might be interested in the product.
All right.
Also coming up, guys. Also coming up, did you know, Hawks fans, that Trae Young's got a brand new bag?
What?
A new gig for our point guard. We'll explain. Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell, guys, on a Monday. And by the way, some nasty weather did roll through parts of town early. We had a meeting today. I mean, once in a while, it does feel like work, but it was a good meeting. And Mike Conti bought us lunch. That was very nice of our boss. But all of a sudden, it got really dark here in Midtown. It's that big, you know, it always is a band of showers. It comes from the west, from Alabama, and rolls through. But I know where I live, on the south side of town, and a little bit further south of me, Thomas Crossroads down in Noonan, there were reports of a tornado touching down. So hopefully not much damage, I hope, or any at all. But it was kind of funky out there. The rain did clear out. Now it looks like a good day. And I just got news from my wife. I've got 500 square feet of sod that just got delivered in a pallet.
Hey, so I've got exciting times for a homeowner, Mike,
yeah,
right
now.
So yes.
By the time I sit in traffic after I leave the show and I get home, I'm going to have basically the headlights. Or maybe I'll get one of those like little headbands with a light on it, like the bicyclists wear at night.
Get like one of those old school where they did the football practices in the like the open fields back in the day, those big overhead lights.
That's what I got to do today. I'm going to go be putting some sod down. And a lot of my neighbors now, two ways of looking at it. There's two types of neighbors that I have. The neighbor who, like me, says, look, if I can do it myself, I am going to do it myself. If there's something that I'm capable of without killing myself, like I'm not going to get up on the roof and clear the gutters. There's certain gutters, Carl, I can reach with a ladder that I'm going to do. Now, if I can borrow a neighbor's power tiller, you know, gas power, and I can rip holes in the ground, it's pretty easy. So I did that over the weekend. Now I just can't walk.
Is that why you're limping?
Yes, every bone in my body. I'm going to run out of all that CBD stuff I just ordered last week.
I saw you walk out of studio, and you look like Sanford and Son walking out of here. I mean,
if I sit for more than a half hour, everything is tight. And
their momentum movement was from a great point. That's what got the juice for them.
Yes, I will. And I was taking advantage of, again, the wonderful assortment of pain-relieving medication from our friends at the Georgia Hemp Company over the weekend.
It's good stuff.
Now, I was just saying before you rolled in, I got 500 square foot of sod just arrived.
It's good luck with that. Come on, hire somebody, man.
No, if I can do it myself, I'm going to do it.
Well, look, you've proven, Mike, that you don't... You get hurt when you're doing this, though.
No. I have become my father. It just aches and pains.
No, look,
just being miserable.
I'm redoing some boards on my deck, and literally, Michelle's
and you can
like,
make the call.
Well, no, but she's like, how much money are you going to spend to get the tools needed? Because some of this stuff, I don't have the necessary tools. So I'm like, I'm not going to spend that much. And over the weekend, I realized I'm going to have to spend a lot to get the necessary tools, you know, miter saw, all these things that I'm going to need to cut the wood precisely to make sure that these pieces fit. To your point, I feel like I can do it myself. I'm just hoping like 3 weeks from now I'm not coming on the radio and going, yeah, I need somebody to come place these boards on my deck. Because I may have to do that, but I feel like you. I think I can do it. It's not a big deal.
So I'm on it. I'm just – and now –
not a big deal.
I have actually, as I told you on Friday's show, I'm getting a sense of pride of accomplishment and actually saying, I did this. Hey, man, Trae Young's doing some stuff. Oklahoma basketball has hired Trae as assistant general manager. Figurehead role? What does this actually mean?
I don't know. I think right now just a consulting kind of deal. But I also think that Trae is going to give back as he has to the university. And, you know,
listen. Give $1 million to the Sooners.
He was there for a year, was, you know, led the country in scoring and a big part of him getting to the NBA, obviously. But he's excited to be working with the program as the assistant general manager. Mike, I just feel like his involvement and when they have to ask a question or two about certain things, they can lean on Trae and he can hopefully help them out.
It's good for his program. Good to see a guy being true to his school, as the Beach Boys sang. And also, by the way, Trae, you didn't see last night, as he was exiting the court at State Farm, there was a young fan with his mom. Trae basically gives him half his wardrobe as he's coming off the court. The kid was going bananas.
Yeah,
it was great.
He does a lot of that, man. I mean, I've seen him do that quite a bit in his career. But, you know, I think, Mike, when we talk about, like, Andrew Luck going back to Stanford, right? He's done with football, but he's their general manager. Maybe Trae is going down that road when he's all said and done. But listen, he's in the prime of his career. I said to you, he's got 10 more years if he wants to play. Right. I don't know how long he wants to play, but yeah, this is interesting that he does this and takes this on now.
Final Four is set. TV numbers have been through the roof, and I would imagine this Final Four will actually be as up there, Carl, as some of the ones we've seen in recent years with all the blue bloods in there. And as we know, it's an all SEC on one side with Auburn taking on Florida, and of course Duke against Houston, and I think either way you're not going to be disappointed. And if we get either Auburn quarter, Florida versus Duke. You think Duke, by the way, beats Houston? Cooper Flagg can handle the press in that defense and Kelvin Sampson's Cougars?
Look, I like Duke to win it. I'm just curious how they're going to play Duke, and I'm talking about defensively. They've been so good. Here's the deal with Houston, if you hadn't watched them. They're so good, Mike, where they go, I'm better than you one-on-one defensively, and you're not going to beat me. And so they don't double, and they pressure the ball, so they turn teams over, and then they get easy baskets. I feel like Duke can handle it if anybody can. And then, like I said, they got a closer, man. If it gets down tight at the end of a game, Houston ran a play, I think, to get to the Final Four, an inbounds pass play where they gave it back to the inbounder, and he lays it up, and buzzer, they win the game. Cooper Flagg can win a game for you at the end and take a game over.
Hey, man, Houston has basically been one of the winningest program the last 4 years without Carl bringing home the championship under Kelvin Sampson. So we'll see if they can get it done. Also, guys, over the weekend, I know that there were so many things to be watching, and United kind of got lost in the mix. There were so many events. We were all focused maybe on the Braves and getting off to the start of the season. Unbelievable cover behind win from Atlanta United. We talked about it earlier with Mike Conti. Jason Longshore is going to join us tomorrow. Maybe this is the springboard, because you're down 3-1 in MLS. You're generally not coming back.
No.
But they found a way, and some unbelievable goals from Latte Loth. If you hadn't seen it, if you weren't live at Mercedes-Benz, check it out at AtlantaUnited.com. The other thing that was going on was one of the final tournaments before we get to the Masters, and a guy that has not yet won in the States finally got it done. Min-Woo Lee, who is from Australia. He's got a little mustache.
He does.
And he does play a little slow. So much so that his playing partner has been accused of trying to sabotage Min-Woo Lee's first tournament win. Mm. Tempers flaring at the Houston Open. Now, if you didn't see this, it basically got picked up by Bones McKay. That's the former caddy of Phil Mickelson, who now has the microphone, is out on the course for NBC. Apparently, there was a situation where there was a drop, and I guess he hit it in the water, and it took forever to kind of figure out what they're going to do. Lee had a setback, put the ball in the water on the 16th hole, and he bounces back, hits a bogey, but it took basically 30 minutes to finish the 8th hole.
Wow.
Because he spent 12 minutes debating a shot that ended up in a bush before opting to clear it unplayable, and you had to get the rules official in. And this guy does play at a rather slow clip. So much so that the dude he's playing with, named Alejandro Tosti, who's from Argentina, apparently not too happy. Jim Bones McKay from NBC says that Tosti, quote, has been disrespectful over a drop situation on the first hole with one of their playing partners named Ryan Fox, because apparently this guy was a rhythm guy, wants to play. Remember the duck, El Pato?
Oh, yeah.
Angel Cabrera, he played quick.
Angel Cabrera, yeah.
I like guys who play. Get it over with. But anyway, apparently he didn't like one of the guys he was playing with because he took some time early in the round, and then the dispute comes up a little bit later. Tosti responded in kind, opting for what Bones McKay described as, quote, glacially slow approach to the 12th hole, where he was seemingly attempting to hold up Lee out of spite. Quote, I don't know what's going on, but Tosti's playing at his own pace. Sometimes it's normal, sometimes he's really slow, but he's decided on this hole to really take his time. He's messing up the group. And that's a jack move.
It is. I do agree. And Mike, listen, Major League Baseball changed forever, right, with the pitch clock. We've got to have something similar with golf to get guys going. Listen, I don't want to say that they need a 25-second. That's unrealistic in golf, right?
Right.
You walk to the ball, especially at the professional level. You're not rolling up in a cart and you're playing with your guys. You walk into the ball. Your caddy's assessing the shot. But, Mike, you can't tell me within a three-minute limit that you know what club you want to hit and the shot you want. Like, there has to be some way to speed this up, but that's a jack move.
Yeah, and it turns out this guy's got a bit of a history. This is according to Golf Digest. Apparently, this guy was accused of he got into it with Tony Finau at the same event in Houston last year. And when he was...
It used to be the Shell Houston Open. It's not anymore.
Right, and when he was trying to make the big show, when he was on the Corn Ferry Tour, which is like the AAA of golf, in 2023, apparently he was suspended for a string of incidents where he, quote, lost his temper on the course. So he runs a little hot. That Latin blood of Tosti from Argentina. But I got to be honest with you. When you watch golf, we saw it. You brought it up on that Tomorrow Golf League that Arthur Blank's a part of. When Tiger got hit with a over 30 second.
That's right.
I would love to see. Now, the pro golfers will never get down with this, but I'd love to see the shot clock, to your point.
Yeah.
To speed it up.
I don't know what the exact time would be appropriate. Because, again, you're walking from hole to hole. But I guess, Mike, once you get to your ball, the clock starts.
Right. And I don't know about you, man, but unless... Yeah, and here's the thing. If you're guys who don't play golf, because Chris, our producer, doesn't play golf, when you got a group in front of you that just takes forever. Oh, I don't know. If you got four guys on the tee box, I don't know how you are, man. You're right there. I'm right next to you. Not on top of you, but I'm right next to the tee box. You hit, put the ball on the ground. I hit. To see some of these guys, five freaking practice. Unless you're playing for like $20 a hole.
And even then, you're not that good.
Come on.
Yeah.
It just wears me out. But enough about you guys in front of me at Canongate Golf playing Rockmore. All right, well, you know what I noticed today on the timeline? I showed it to Carl earlier in the studio. You know, on Facebook, you get stuff that comes up. It was you and me interviewing the late, great Bill Walton at Houston a couple years ago in the Final Four. And it made me think, man, first off, how fat I looked. But secondly, how awesome Bill was as a great guest every time we had him on.
Every time. Bill would come in. It didn't matter. And not just those things. Like when you saw him out, I'd always laugh, Carl! And yes. He'd just come over and embrace you. And then he'd sit out, and Mike and I would always laugh because before the interview started, we said, how many questions are we going to ask Bill? And the over-under was two because right. You'd ask Bill, Bill, how are you doing? I'm so glad you asked. And then he'd just go for 15 minutes. He'd go from one thing to the next, but God rest his soul, Mike. He was an incredible player, Hall of Famer. And again, Mike, we've always argued this. If Bill Walton does not get hurt, guys, he goes down as maybe the greatest player. You guys that didn't understand how good Bill Walton was in his prime,
right.
Prior to all those injuries that added up, he was amazing.
Yeah, and the documentary, I know it was a four-parter, the one that was the 30 for 30 on Walton, but his time in Portland, again, he was just always literally, I mean, we always say the agony of defeat, but he was actually dealing with some miserable feet injuries over his career. You're right about that.
Come on, Atlanta Hawks, let's go.
That's right.
That was, as you said, it was always a blast. Hey, man, let's give a shout-out to Squid Billy. His lovely wife, Amy, has got a little baby Squid Billy ready to pop. Blessed event. Looks like it's going to occur next week. We saw Squid today in the office. Got to give Squid credit. And if my wife is listening, you might want to turn off the radio right now. I ordered another hat. Squid Billy found this vintage Earnhardt 8 Budweiser hat. And for those who remember, Dale Jr. was the Budweiser sponsor.
Right.
And for those who don't know, I've got too many hats and the wife's always up about it. But I said to Squid, I go, that's a killer hat. It was clean.
It was.
So if you're looking for a clean Earnhardt Jr. hat, because you can't, I'd love to find a good looking 3 hat, but unfortunately because there's still 3 racing today and DEI, they just don't have cool, like, it's an old school Earnhardt hat. If you're a NASCAR guy, and by the way, Denny Hamlin won after like forever up in Martinsville over the weekend for NASCAR fans. But Squid, hats off to the haberdashery. I went online. I actually joined the junior thing and got like 15% off.
Okay.
So my wife's listening. It was only $36.
You saved some money. That's key.
Do you get it? You don't have a lot of hats.
A ton of
hats. Did she get on your case about it?
No, because they're out of sight, out of mind.
See, that's a problem. I'm a hat discarder.
Yeah.
I mean, there's be a hat on the kitchen counter.
No,
there'd be a hat on the bar in the living room.
I got a ton of hats.
I don't put my hats away. That's a problem.
Yeah, they're all put away.
How many?
Like hundreds.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I actually probably need to go through and because I have some of this stuff.
But you can't give a used hat.
I need to get rid of it. But there's some of this stuff I have gotten and I haven't used in years. So, but yeah, to your point. But out of sight, out of mind, Mike, that's the key.
Hey, man, we talked about it earlier. We brought this up in Yeah, Man, No, Man. Peter Schrager, former intern of ours at the old station, says goodbye to Good Morning Football. Everyone's reporting it. It looks like he is going to be going to ESPN, which I think is interesting. Also, one other nugget today with the...
I left some money on the table.
So, you know what? Schrag's going against those guys. I'd love to see it because Schrag gives as good as he gets. And it's, you know,
yeah, but my guess is, Mike, he's going to be an NFL reporter. Right. For them.
Or they jazz up that. Do you watch the ESPN on the mornings, on Sunday mornings with Sexy Rexy in that studio show? I don't watch any of it.
No, I'm working.
Yeah, you're on TV.
No, seriously, by the time I get off, that show's on like 5 hours.
I can't. You think that's a good fit, Chris, by the way? Put Schrager in there with the beef up that ESPN set? Because it's all ex-jocks, and it's kind of a one-trick pony.
No, it is, but I don't think that show is savable. To be completely
you're talking
honest.
About the Randy Moss show, yeah. Right? Is that right?
It's just not as good as the other one.
It's tough. It's hard to watch.
You're talking about the Fox show?
Yeah. All those shows have too many panelists. We're talking about the ESPN, Good Morning, Sunday NFL.
Yeah, it's sort of like pick the best of bad options at this point with some of those Sunday morning shows, but yeah.
Hey, one last nugget, guys. We're hitting the road. When's the last time you and I did a show in Commerce, man?
Coming, you mean?
Damn it. Get your C's right.
Coming.
Man. Know your C's in Atlanta.
Yes, we're coming up to Coming.
Coming. Are you a Cumminite? A Cumminer? Be careful how you pop that
very,
one.
Very
we're going to be at Cumming at Buffalo's Cafe, guys, on Wednesday. So we're going to be coming up 400 to see you. So join the party, pal. And then we'll be at Murph's for the home opener for the Braves. Hopefully win a few games against the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, coming up, guys, is it inevitable
I mean, seriously, we've talked a lot about it. The coaches are meeting. There are owners there. There's stuff going on down there in Palm Springs. But is it truly inevitable that it's going to happen? Find out what we're talking about next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Where is
Raheem?